Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This is a special edition Sci-Fi and Squeeze podcast.
This is Sonia from Sci-Fi and Squeam, and we have on the phone line Scott Mannion, the writer and director of something called Anima. And it's one of the very rare occasions that we get to talk to somebody who's actually making a science fiction film in Australia. So that's
yes,
really
in Australia.
Refreshing. What can you tell us about the film?
It's about a rogue scientist struggling to preserve his terminal wife in a virtual world of his own making. Yeah, it's kind of a low-key sci-fi in the style of like Tarkovsky, Kubrick, and sort of a bit of Terrence Malick in there too.
So yeah. It's more psychological type of drama as well?
Very much so, yeah.
Very much, yeah. Now, I believe it is a 13-minute drama sci-fi production, and it is due for its first viewing in January here in Australia.
Yeah, it's playing at Stickerfest, which is mid-January, and it's having its international premiere at Claremont Ferran, which is pretty damn exciting for the cast and crew to be playing there.
Right, very cool. That is where, just for our listeners?
That's in France. It's probably the biggest short film festival in the world. It's in the top tier of all festivals, so yeah, it's pretty exciting to go out there.
Boon.
It's great for Aussie sci-fi to get that because it kind of puts it on the radar that a genre film can play.
Something like
festivals like that.
It does sound very much like psychological thriller almost, because very ambitious, this idea. Is it more minimalistic as far as special effects? How would you describe
the sci-fi
aspect?
Special effects are quite, I mean, they're scaled. There's a lot of special effects. We had people shooting cosmological time-lapse in Austria and people shooting macro, which is like sort of like microscopic fluid dynamics, and that was mixed with our space CGI, so we really got some striking strong effects that look like they cost, you know, lots and lots and lots of money, but we were able to come in, you know, on a small budget that we group funded online. But the result is stunning. It would have been good to get you a link so you could have watched it beforehand, but I don't know if you checked out the trailer, but yeah, it looks just, it's like watching photoreal, you know, gaseous aurora clouds in the atmosphere, you know. When you use that fluid dynamics, it beats any equation a computer generation could come up with, because it's real fluids, and when they're slowed down and you mix them with space CGI, it just has that very real effect to it. It just feels very, naturalistic in terms of the generation.
Pretty old school as well, technique-wise. Was it budgetary or financial restraints there?
It was a technique I wanted to try out, to be honest. I'd seen it used successfully in The Fountain and Tree of Life, you know, Malick's film and Aronofsky's movie, to just create beautiful cosmological images. You look at those films and you go, how the hell did they afford that kind of CG when other, you know, massive big budget films? But yeah, I just looked and it just goes to show that the art world's pretty egalitarian out there. I just searched for the right guy and pitched the film to him, and he came on board the film pro bono. And that was, you know, it just goes to show, if you do put yourself out there on the internet, there are artists out there that are willing to be part of something, you know, and try to make it special.
Look, it's special. Now, you got a lot of that. Was a lot of the funding through crowdfunding, Kickstarter and things like that? Did that help you?
Yeah, that was amazing. Again, the same sort of thing, reaching out to the community, you know, with a big concept and a big concept film, setting a big goal, and it was a great response. And I think also because of the technology addiction kind of prominent in society at the moment, with Facebook taking over, you know, and all social structures kind of changing,
yeah,
I think
definitely.
It's something that resonated with the community, and therefore we were pretty successful with we met our funding goals on Kickstarter and used the money to get the film started and make the film. It was a long process. It was a two-year, took about a year to sort of get the whole funding campaign ready, and then, you know, get into pre-production, and then finally, you know, the rest of the year making the film. And now we're just, you know, touring it. So it's funny, for 13 minutes of entertainment, it's such a long period of investment. People don't often realise how much time can actually go into short filmmaking as well.
amazing. As far as the, I'm very curious about the background to the story itself. What was the inspiration there?
I experienced a bit of sort of internet gaming addiction when I was younger, and I read into it, and there's a subculture in Japan called the Hikikomori, which are about 1 million people that are sort of stuck inside their rooms and their only connections through technology. So that kind of idea inspired me sort of come up with a scientist had invented a way to communicate with his basically terminal wife and live through his memories through a machine. So it's set in sort of modern times or, very close future. But it came from that idea that, people would be escaping. Because like any drug, escapism, a lot of it's escapism. People, take, not all the time, but a lot of the time it's getting away from the hard things in life. You're escaping, drinking alcohol, whatever. So if you are addicted to something, that's what happens to him. He's escaping his own pain and to relive the positive memories in his life. And, try to keep his wife alive within that. But that's where it came from, essentially, yeah.
Now, you've also, additionally to that, I believe that you got support or help or assistance from Patrick McGorry and another person, Philip Tam. Now, their background is psychology, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, that was really great because very early on I was able to speak to Philip and talk to Pat. But Philip was great in the sense of research and understanding, right at the forefront of the condition, because I had my own personal experience in internet research, but I really wanted to understand it at the core, and he dealt with it a lot at the moment. It's a big issue, especially psychologically. It's coming up heaps now.
Yeah,
and seeing
definitely.
A lot of more and more patients are coming as young kids are brought up on the internet, becoming addicted to it, and just having that take over their lives. And it's half of addiction is psychological. It's not just the chemical addiction, whether it's cigarettes or anything. It's habitual, and these kind of addictions can be just as powerful, and sometimes even worse.
Very powerful.
Yeah, very interesting to do that deep research there with you. Yeah, no, it's an interesting thing to think about because
even that becomes addictive.
People realize that the internet's permanent. You may try to delete it, but someone might have it in their email, and especially photos. It's around forever, and I think also the anonymity. People hiding behind computer screens too. They're happy to make comments that they probably would never say to someone in person, which is interesting. And you've got that whole cyberbullying thing going on where essentially bullies are chasing people all the way into their bedrooms. They can't escape it because they're connected up to it via Facebook. It's definitely a current theme. And I think that through psychologists and education, we just got to, lawmakers and everything need to keep vigilant to keep catching up with what's going on so, they can effectively keep, society working and people in good condition.
Where can people go to find out more?
If they go to www.anima, A-N-I-M-A, film,
yes,
F-I-L-M, .com.au. Everything's there, press kits and all sorts of stuff and blogs.
Cool.
And we kind of blog most of the journey of the film, so there's a lot of interesting stuff in there in terms of how it was made and the trailer is there too. And if anyone wants to come to Flickerfest in Bondi in mid-January, plenty of cool films playing as well.
Great amount of crafted and experienced, skilled people you've got on, well, who helped you with the film, working with people like Mike Malloy. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, look, that was
his CV's
great.
His CV is pretty impressive.
Sorry, say again. What?
I said his CV is very impressive.
Oh, yeah, someone that's worked, Michael Caine and Stephen Frears, and I love that movie, The Hit, that he shot. But I think I just applied the theory. When you do these things, you just start from the top down. You try to get the best person possible. And I think I was lucky that the story, again, had that one theme, and people thought, oh, okay, I think I'd like to be a part of this. They felt it was, somewhat important. And also they... I think because it was quite ambitious, they thought, I will help this guy out with it. Because I'm essentially an emerging filmmaker, so I don't have some huge reputation to be banking on to get people like this. But I was very lucky. But I think anyone out there, any short filmmaker, should always try that. Try from the top down. Just go try to get the best people you can. Surround yourself with the most talented crew. And
that'll
make you look good. Make your job much easier.
Yeah, well, it does stand out. As soon as you see Stanley Kubrick, he's worked with people like that. So it's pretty amazing. Now, as far as your own career, like you were saying just then, you're upcoming, new to the whole biz, basically, Scott. Do you see Anima as becoming a feature film? Do you think it will expand? That often, can happen with short films.
Yeah, that's possible. I've got another one that probably will, but I think with Anima, it's more, it is what it is. I think it meant, it's a story that was meant to be that size, but I do have a feature that is within the same tone, different story. So that's what I'll be going over to France with, that and another feature script, just to pitch and try to, you know, sell and do all that sort of business. But yeah, look, I do have one that is similar in time, but not a, you know, not the same sort of film.
Okay, so you'll probably keep it to the running size and scale that it is. And,
I think so, yeah. I mean, who knows? You never know what you'll do in the future. We'll see. Maybe I want to revisit the theme again. It's pretty interesting, and it's been pretty prominent in my life as well.
Okay, so you're a sci-fi film buff, are you? Do you have any favourites?
I like all films.
Okay.
Sci-fi films, favourites. I like Tarkovsky's Stalker.
Yes,
recent films, District 9.
Okay.
You know, 2001 A Space Odyssey is another good sci-fi. The Fountain, it's great. I guess I kind of consider Malick's movie as well a bit of a sci-fi as well. But, I mean, I'm not. I like all films. Like, I even like romantic comedies, you know. It's all good. It just happened to end up with sci-fi. There's some of the Pie is another good one. Aronofsky's Pie.
That's a good one.
And the Sundance hit Primer. That's really good. If anyone wants to see a low-key sci-fi that is really, really clever and made for a low budget, watch that movie, Primer. Very good. No, it was the Shane Carruth, the American filmmaker, shot on 16mm. It's a time travel movie. If you haven't seen it, watch it. It's really good. Very good.
Yeah.
One of actually sort of inspired this one a little bit, actually.
Fantastic. And so what happens to the film after France? Do you know what you might do then?
Well, essentially, it's a massive market there. It's a really it's a boon for the project in terms of getting a sales agent and, you know, trying to actually sell, because it's very rare to, you know, sell a short film and get it distributed on TV and the internet. But there, once you're in Claremont Brand, it's amazing for festivals that are out there to scout. If I go, oh shit, look, excuse my French. they'll look at the film and say, oh wow, we'll play that at our festival, and you get a bunch of invites. And you know, it's a big market event, so it'll be pretty exciting for everyone involved and in our careers after it, I think. It'll be a really, really fun time to go out and meet filmmakers, get the film out there. Everyone's hard work and,
Lovely. Oh, sounds brilliant, actually. I believe, is that near the Alps?
I'm not sure.
Claremont Forum?
I've barely even looked at it. I've been so busy, I haven't had time to look at the town, but I'm sure I'll explore when I'm over there. I can't speak a word of French, so it's probably useless with a map.
Well, I'm sure there'll be some lovely wine and some nice clear spring water. All right. Well, cool. Well, thanks for talking to us this evening and talking to us about your Australian sci-fi drama, psychological drama as well, about addiction to technology. I think we've all got a little bit of that these days. Yeah, good luck with Anima.
Indeed.
And
thanks very much.
Where it goes into the ethosphere and beyond, hopefully. That's
thanks
cool.
so much. No worries.
Thanks, Scott Mannion. Have a good day.
All right.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Everything's strange, everything wild. Once a week, go a little night. Join us on Sci-Fi and Squeeze on Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.